And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Big Joe Dubin. Michelle Knezovic here with you. Intern Hanley as well on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, you've made it through a whole week with me.
I know. I just tweeted out, this is my last day of community service from the judge. Sent it to me over here for 4 days. And this is, I'm kind of a little sad over there. I'm also sad that Michelle's name's not in the open. What's going on there? That's probably
You're
some Rex Road
deal. Take that
deal.
Back up with the boss man. That's who's some Rex, fix the microphone.
That's some Rex Road deal. And I'll do that. You know.
Blame
by
Rex.
The way, by the way, Rex Road liked some tweet last night. I'm gonna tell you, he liked a tweet. Of course, it was smashing me at what time they liked the tweet. It looks like it was 11:30 last night. So, wait, enjoy that vacation, Joe.
What you're saying is he's not off Twitter.
All right, yeah. Somebody's talking about the mic being not as a problem for me, but not for Joe Rexroad. And I tweeted back, Joe hasn't left the house since the Union won the Battle of Antietam in 1864. That's last time Joe ventured out of his house. So there was obviously not a mic problem that goes on there.
There was not. Michelle, how are you? What's going on?
Doing great this morning, guys. It's Friday. Made it through the week. Now we get the weekend. Joe Rexroad totally has been tweeting.
Yeah.
He totally did not do his challenge.
Thank you for not saying Fry-yay. God, just drives me nuts.
Fry-yay?
Yes, Fry-yay. I just, man.
You just said it three times.
I did, didn't I? Between that and people putting Salt Life stickers on the back of their car, which drive me nuts,
salt
too,
life.
As well. It's like, where are you going? We're going to the lake. Okay, enjoy that salt at the lake today.
Yeah, just says Salt Life.
Yeah.
They live in.
Have you seen those? Those are terrible, Michelle. Yeah, you'll notice them everywhere.
Did it ever get up to 115 heat index yesterday? We got some rain, or at least I did, in the afternoon yesterday, which brought the temperature down. I was in the midst of what I was hoping was going to be like an hour and a half nap. It ended up being about 20 minutes because I'm pretty sure that lightning may have struck my house. It was really close wherever it was.
How'd your dog react?
She hopped up out of the bed and ran under the bed. That's how loud it was.
Nice. I didn't see that. I saw that it rained and came through, but there's nothing beats an afternoon nap when it's raining that.
It's great.
Nothing like that.
No question about it. Did the draft show last night with Willie Donick, Chris Mason, and myself. We had a great time out at Fordyce Center in Bellevue. Lots of people came out for the draft, and the Predators made their pick at number 17. So we wondered, kind of heading into the draft yesterday, would they stay at 17? Would they trade up? Would they trade back? Would they be involved of maybe a bigger trade with roster players? And the Predators stayed put at number 17, and they made their selection yesterday. Joakim Kemell, the selection by the Predators.
Well done.
18 years old, forward out of Finland, played in the Finnish Elite League last year. A lot of people saying, you know, he's a top 10 talent that the Predators got at number 17. So a lot of people think the Predators may have gotten a steal in this draft. Now we'll wait and see. The interesting part, Joe, about the NHL draft is we'll probably see him on the ice for the Predators in 2025, maybe. 2026.
Oh, that's, you think that's soon?
Probably.
Okay. But do the European guys, this is a totally ignorant question, I apologize. European guys don't have to worry about college for the most part, right?
No. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Whereas if you draft an American or Canadian, there's a chance they go to college for 4 years. Can they re-enter the draft after like 4 years?
After they go all 4 years, they basically become a free agent. So you got to get them signed.
Okay.
In that process.
That's a lot that goes on there, man.
There's a whole lot that goes on there.
So you did the show with Willie and Mason?
Oh, yeah.
Were you able to get a word in last night?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
we got a few in there.
Sure. Willie tends to go long-winded a few times, so that's good.
We had Kemell on last night, and it's always interesting to me because, you know, you've got these kids. You know, they are, I mean, he's 18 years old. He just turned 18 like a month and a half
okay.
ago. So he's still literally a kid. And he's trying to do this interview on the radio in a country he's never been to in a second language. And, you know, he did a really good job, and we appreciate him joining us last night. But it's always interesting. Like, the moment after you get drafted, like the amount of things that you immediately have to do. You're on the stage with the commissioner, then you got to go straight doing the media stuff. You got to go, like, do a photo shoot right after that, and then you're on radio shows. Like, it's a whirlwind for about 2 hours right after you get drafted.
So was he in Montreal?
Yeah.
Okay. So he wasn't stuck over in Finland somewhere.
He was not. He was there in Montreal.
How soon after he got drafted did you guys have him on the phone?
It was probably, I would say, 45, 50 minutes after he got drafted. So, you know, you go do the traditional press conference stuff there in Montreal, and then the photo shoots, and then we got him on about 45 minutes after.
I saw they had him in a number 22 jersey.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that. That's Jordan 2-2.
I think it was just because of the draft year.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Can we retract that, Michelle? Erase the last 20 seconds of this interview and pull it back out. Thank you so much.
Well, the interesting part about that is, like, normally they've got the guy's name on the back of the jersey.
Yeah.
And this one had no name. And it, you know, Willie and I were talking about it. Like, I guess they just didn't expect him to be there. Like, they thought he'd be gone by the time they picked at number 17. So there was not enough time to, like, turn this thing around and go get him. So it sounds like from everything that is out there that the Predators may have gotten a steal and that David Poile and company is pretty happy.
Yeah. I know obviously nothing about this, but the fact that they got a guy that they like and move on. It's just that now you got to wait and see him develop, and hopefully he's here in a couple of years contributing.
It was an interesting day for the Blackhawks yesterday. Obviously, Predators fans like seeing their team be dismantled, which is basically what they did yesterday. They traded Alex DeBrincat, which is a 24-year-old player, one of about four good players that they have on their roster. They traded him yesterday. They traded a 21-year-old in Kirby Dach, and they got draft picks back, so they were awful last year. They're going to be way worse this year. So if you're the Predators, you're looking around your division. Arizona is terrible. Chicago is terrible. So that's two teams that, let me just go on and tell you, you don't have to worry about competing for a playoff spot next year. So in a way, the division got easier yesterday, but that also means that every other team that's in your division also gets to play those teams too, so it may take more points.
Well, someone who I'm a big Preds fan. I'm not an Arizona always gives the Preds troubles, right?
They do.
Even back to the playoffs in 2012, 2013, whenever it was,
yeah.
And then the bubble year,
2020.
Yeah. So I love the fact that Arizona could go that way, but at the same time, Preds always have that massive problem with them.
It feels like, and look, the Titans had this last year with the Texans and the Jets too. Like, that's the thing about professional sports is when you feel like you're just going to waltz in there and kick somebody's butt, sometimes that doesn't work out the way you think it's going to work.
Correct. Out. Yeah, all the way. So that's will he be here for the development camp next week?
I don't know yet. I think they're still trying to determine that. We asked him that last night, and he has not yet determined that. But my guess is probably yeah. So development camp is next week, which, by the way, I think it's the first time it's been open to the public in a couple of years.
Oh,
so
good.
You can come out on Tuesday at Centennial Sportsplex. They'll be on the ice at practice, be on the ice Thursday as well. And then they've got the prospect scrimmage on Friday, which I believe is at Ford Ice Center in Bellevue. So there's three different opportunities for you to come out next week.
Is that at noon on Friday?
I think it is.
It's an early start on Friday.
Maybe 10:30.
Yeah. All right, so when you get the guy, first-round draft pick comes on the radio, and he is from Finland, and he does. What's the first question? What do you know about the Preds or – honky-tonking?
I just led off with, you know, what was the moment like when you got drafted, and then we got into all that other stuff. I don't think he knew a whole lot about Nashville. I think what he knew about Nashville was kind of limited to Mikael Granlund, who's a Finnish player, and Jussi Saros, who is a Finnish player.
Oh, that's
with
it?
The Predators. I think it's about it.
Oh, okay. Well,
it's about the extent of what he knew about the city.
All right, today was their second and third round, or is that tonight?
Second through seventh. So they'll finish the whole thing out tonight. So you do the first round the first day, and then they'll do the rest of the draft later today.
Wow, it's just such different from the other drafts.
It really is.
Is baseball Monday?
Baseball, I believe, is a Monday, yeah.
It's like this coming Monday.
I think it is, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So all the drafts.
That's always been amazing to me that they're just like, yeah, in the middle of the season, we'll just stop.
Well, they used to have the baseball draft during the College World Series.
Yeah.
So the Monday before the College World Series started, I think, or maybe the Super Regionals, and that was always odd to me because now guys are getting drafted. And it makes you wonder, like, you know, college bowl games, kids are now opting out. They're not playing. Yeah. You know, you wonder, all right, I got drafted. I'm the third pick, but I got to go to our teams in the College World Series. Because I always said, when I said this, and this is crazy about draft choices, I said after the 2019 season when they postponed 2020, that Kumar Rocker should have never pitched another inning for Vanderbilt again.
Yeah.
Oh, and I got blasted. I felt like Rex Road on Twitter. I got blasted from Vanderbilt fans left and right. Oh, how dare you? You know, and now it's good to play, you know, armchair quarterback and say, you know, look what happened. But he's one of those where he'd already won a national championship with Vanderbilt. What else could he do?
Right.
And just save that arm and get drafted now. And hopefully he makes his way back up there. All I think with the Mets last year was just bizarre, and I still don't understand what happened.
Yeah, and he's kind of an independent ball right now, and he's pitching pretty well. So, I don't know what's going to happen with the Kumar Rocker thing. This could be just a classic case of the Mets screwing things up. But it is like the drafts in the MLB, the NHL are just really different. But last night's was pretty eventful in the NHL, and we'll see if there's anything roster-wise that comes down in the in rounds 2 through 7 today. Just some quick notes from yesterday in the NHL. Chris Letang signing a 6-year contract with the Pittsburgh Penguins, so that will take him through, I believe, age 41 as he's with the Penguins. So that's a heck of a deal for Chris Letang at his age. Marc-Andre Fleury re-signing with the Minnesota Wild as well, so the Wild have their goaltender next year. There's been a whole lot going on. JT Miller, rumored to be on the trading block. Matthew Tkachuk, we'll see what happens with him and the Flames. No contract yet for Johnny Gaudreau either with the Flames. So there's a lot going on right now at the NHL level. And, of course, I mentioned it, the Blackhawks totally dismantling their team yesterday, which I'm sure Seth Jones, who used to play for the Predators and signed with the Blackhawks last year on a 7-year deal, is having a lot of fun.
Right. What's now. He making?
Oh, he's making a lot of money.
He doesn't care. Hey, who was the number one pick last night?
It was Slakovsky.
Yes. What's his first name?
Yuri Slakovsky.
Yeah. Good job, Robbie. You're the best, man. Pronouncing those names correctly.
Kind of a surprise there. A lot of people thought Shane Wright would go at number one overall. He slid all the way to 4. So, could have been an interesting draft.
Because Arizona took Logan Cooley, center. That guy is good out of I was going to act like I knew something, but I can't read where he's from.
So far, you're dead on. He is good.
I was hoping that Simon Nemec would fall to the Preds, another defenseman.
Didn't quite make it, though.
They did not.
Number 2 overall.
I've been most impressed with you this week with your high. I know you work for NHL.com for a long time, but still, your hockey knowledge is pretty good, Robbie.
I told you to begin the week. I am the king of useless sports knowledge, and I put that on display every day. We're off and running.
Yes!
Robbie and Rex Road, Robbie Stanley, Joe Dubin, Michelle Knezvik, intern Hanley here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Some more rumblings on the Philip Forsberg situation yesterday. We'll get into that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Is there anything we need to know about concerning Philip Forsberg here in Nashville? Is there any new news that could be coming down the pike here sometime today or in the very, very near future, in your opinion?
Well, I just think, look, like you guys know my opinion. I really thought that they were going to – this was going to come down to this week or next week, and I really believe there was a path to get it done. So far, I'm 1 for 2. I was right about Letang. I thought that one was going to get done. I thought there was a decent chance Kemper would stay. Obviously, that's not happening. It was not decent enough. I think that what has happened here is they're not far apart, but it's just not been as easy to close. I still think, at the end of the day, I think there's still a path to get it done between Forsberg and the Predators. But I will say this. This has been harder than I thought. I think it's been harder than everyone thought. And I always worry about the emotion in times like this. I think if cooler heads prevail, this works out. And I still see a path to a deal. But there's no question it's been harder than everybody thought.
That was Elliot Friedman yesterday on the DDC with an update on the Philip Forsberg situation. Still no deal for Philip Forsberg and the Nashville Predators. And Joe, I thought there was a chance it might happen yesterday. You know, the draft to me has always made sense as a time to get the deal done, and that leaves you some flexibility
sure.
at the draft so you know exactly what your roster looks like at that point. Now, the Predators and Philip Forsberg's agent, J.P. Barry, met yesterday in Montreal. They did have some discussions. Obviously, there was not a resolution and there was no deal that they reached yesterday. And Pierre LeBrun put this out there and said the Preds still in the low eights, players in the high eights. So it doesn't seem like there's been much movement in terms of the money part of this either so far this week. Pierre said, seems plausible that this stalemate could end if the Preds were willing to move to $8.5 million per year, which...
Why isn't he willing to move down?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it depends on, I guess, what he thinks he can get on the open market. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's July the 8th, and you've got until July 13th to figure this out. One of the two sides, you're going to have to move a little bit here sometime in the next 4 days, or this thing's not getting done. I mean, it's just the way it is. Now, the good news is, if you're a Preds fan... Like, still, when you break it down, if they're in the low eights and Forsberg's in the high eights, it's not that far. Like, you don't have to move that much. It's not like the Predators are offering $7 million and Forsberg's asking for $9.5 million.
Correct.
If that were the case right now,
yeah,
you'd be in a lot of trouble.
Well, I think just come down a little bit. I mean, it's not all on Poyle. Poyle sure. better get it signed. But I just come down a little bit, then meet in the middle, and then everybody's happy. At what point... Is in your mind that if it doesn't get signed by like Sunday at 5 p.m., then it's a done, then it's over? Is there an unofficial point in your mind, not the deadline time with free agency, but in your mind that if he's not signed by this time and this hour, it's over?
I would say I still think it, honestly, if I had to predict a date right now for this thing to get done, I would say July 12th, which is the day before free agency. That would be when I. My best guess as to when it gets done at this point. But, man, if you get down to July 12th, you're playing a dangerous game if you're the Predators and Philip Forsberg.
If he hits the 13th free agent and not sign, are the Preds done?
I think so. Well, to me, it's just you've had – they've been working on this for over 6 months at this point. So if he gets to July 13th and becomes a free agent, then the Predators can no longer offer him the eighth year because he's made it to free agency. And once you make it to free agency, everybody's on an even playing field. So the max the Predators could offer would be 7 years, and the max somebody else would offer would be 7 years as well. So my guess is, and we've seen this happen before.
Okay.
You know, Mikael Granlund last year, he made it to free agency without a deal. And he eventually came back to the Predators, but his deal was only a 4-year deal. You weren't talking about a max deal with him.
All right, so he doesn't say he doesn't sign with the Predators, and okay. He hits a free agent open market. If you're his agent, and say all these teams are offering the same amount of money, so there's like 7 teams in this, not the whole league.
Yep.
Where would you want him to go?
Well, that's the interesting thing, because you start to look at the teams that right now today have the money to bring on a contract that he's going to command, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of $8.5-9 million a year, in my opinion. I mean, let's think about some of these teams. Buffalo, they're awful. Arizona's awful. Seattle's awful. Anaheim's awful. Detroit has a ton of cap space. They're getting better, but they're still not a playoff team. I mean, a lot of these teams are not good. So if you're Philip Forsberg, yes, you might find better money somewhere else, but do you want to sign – like, is that all you care about? Like, do you want to go to Seattle and then miss the playoffs for the next 4 years before you're back in, you know, chasing a cup?
So we talked yesterday, and like, we like Forsberg and all that, but if he signs with a team like that, you know it's purely for money.
Correct.
You know, and so you hope he re-signs here and wants to win a championship, but if you go to a team that has no – chance to win go to the playoff the next 5 years, that's like, all right, you got your money, see you, take care. And I think if that happens, you look at somebody like Poyle, like, hey, I did everything I could to match this, and now he goes and signs with the Devils.
Right.
It's obviously not about winning, it's about going to getting paid and doing that, and good luck and see you and move on.
Well, now the interesting part to this, and Friedman brought this up yesterday too, is right now, I mean, those are the type teams that have the cap space. Now, I will say, Colorado at the moment has $24 million in cap space, so they could go after Philip Forsberg if they wanted to, but they have, like, five other guys they're trying to re-sign. So that cap space is a little deceiving. Now, the thing you worry about is if he makes it to free agency and he's actually out there for other teams, do teams around the league, I don't know, let's say like the Blues or the Panthers or the Oilers, who don't have a ton of cap space, do they start to trade some people off and create some cap space to try to go take a run at it? Because that happens at times.
So it's
a big risk to take.
I love the drama. This is good stuff. But I, you know, again, you've told, and I had no idea when they could get this done. I mean, it could get it done in the next hour, right?
Sure. It could be done at any time.
And then people be like, okay. But you know, even people in the Preds, probably front office, like it's either if he signs, re-signs, bring him back, then you know that phone's going to ring at 770 puck. People are like, all right, we feel good about this, and if not, man. It's the other way, and you were like, just hopefully they get it done and he stays here for the next 50 years.
Well, I can tell you, I mean, we were doing the draft show last night, and yeah, people were interested in the pick, and they were interested in some other moves going on around the league. But the most common question we got last night was, hey, so what's going on with Forsberg? Is he signed yet? So, I mean, that's going to be a constant point of conversation until it gets done. And, I mean, the good news is, Joe, we've been talking about this for 6 months. This time next week, we'll know. We'll know one way or the other, whether or not he's a member of the Predators, if he's gone somewhere else. Because, once again, if July 13th comes around, I'd be shocked if he's back at that point.
Well, I'm just glad I'm not here next week if he doesn't resign.
That's right.
With the Nashville Predators, because that phone and people will be living. You know, it's eerie similar, not all the way, to the A.J. Brown thing. Before, it's like, sign him. And then all these, the story comes out, all the demands that A.J. Brown made,
yeah,
and what he was going to do. It was going to cause a chaos during training camp. You're like, get out of here. Get out. And I think, you know, with Forsberg, if he finds that he's signed someplace for the same amount of money he could have gotten here, and he goes there, then I think you will see we don't want you here anyway. Beat it. Get out of here.
I think you definitely could see some of that. Now, I'll say this, and I said this yesterday, and I feel even stronger about it today. Like, there continues to be stuff coming out about this and things kind of leaking, which you could view a couple of different ways. Number one, you could view it as a negotiating tactic by whoever's telling Pierre LeBrun exactly what the numbers are. Or you could view it kind of the way I view it of, it sounds like there's being incremental progress that's being made as this deadline gets closer, which if I'm a Predators fan, I feel pretty good about. Like, I think when you worry is in a situation like Johnny Gaudreau up in Calgary, where there's absolutely nothing. There's no information coming out about this.
Right.
And you're 4 days away from free agency at this point. Like, that to me is a time where you're like, man, it doesn't sound like there's anything that's getting done there. Like, the Forsberg thing at least feels to me like it's ultimately going to end up in a resolution. Like,
well, that's
I'd still be surprised if he doesn't resign.
I asked you today, to me it's unusual for a general manager to come out and talk openly about a contract discussion the way that Poile did.
I've never heard Poile do that, ever.
Me neither. And I think it's great. It's very transparent what's going on, and this is where they are, this is what we're offering, and let's get the job done. Now, if they're haggling over a few $100,000, Robbie, you need to step up to the plate and say, hey, I got you.
I got you covered. Don't worry
we
about
can do
it.
This. Or you get Rex Rhodes. He's packing money like a mining mule. He can take care of that.
We can get over there, and I'm sure we can do what it takes to get it done. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Your thoughts on our phone and text lines. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. More of Robbie and Rex Rhodes coming up next. This is 1025-1063, The Game.
What do you know about the Preds? What do you know about the team that you're now a part of?
It's a great city, and I'm happy with be part of Predators.
And what kind of player are they getting?
Player like goal scorer and who makes them score.
That was Yoko Kamel, first round pick last night for the Nashville Predators. Really talented goal scorer. We'll see what that looks like as he continues to develop. My guess is, I don't know this, but my guess is he'll probably be back in Finland this year in the Finnish Elite League. So we'll see him maybe over in North America a year from now. But we'll see how quickly he can develop and if he can be a steal of the draft, like some people are thinking he is.
I hear this every year about the Preds. I can't believe the guy fell to him. And I mean, it's like every team with
The truth is, like, you never really know.
No, you don't. I went down to Reds. It's how he fits. It's the wait is over for Jimmy Kimmel. I spoke with an NHL draft. That's what I thought they drafted last night when I first, because my eyesight was so bad. I'm like, they get Jimmy Kimmel? That'd be the worst pick ever.
It would be.
I spoke with an NHL draft analyst. He said the most shocking part of the first round was seeing this elite goal scoring prospect tumble out of the top 10 and continue to tumble all the way to number 17 and the Predators. Why was he tumbling? It says the reason, Robbie, he's 5'9 and plays on the wing.
Yep.
How tall is Crosby?
He's about 6 foot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who was, for the Blackhawks, Taves? How tall was he? I'm looking at some player that
I think Taves is, I think he's 6'1".
Okay.
Job like Patrick Kane of the Blackhawks is like 5'10".
There we go. Yeah. Okay. I know it's one of the, see, I'm not as dumb as you think I am, Robbie. I know some players like that.
You're the smartest person I know.
What, Ryan Ellis was tiny.
Yeah, he's five. He's listed 5'9".
Yeah. So, but
this is
I like
my favorite thing in pro sports, like what some of these guys are listed at. Like, they listed Rocco Grimaldi at like 5'8", and I stood next to Rocco Grimaldi. I was like, dude, he's like 5'5".
It's like the Tom Cruise factor. Yeah. It's like, yeah, he's about 5'11". You see him like, he's not over 5 feet tall.
That's right.
That's the Jim Gaffigan voice.
No, that's what you always assume. As women, when somebody says they're 6 foot, you know they're only like 5'10".
Yeah, just rounding up. You're over 5'5". Yeah, just round up.
Drew Brees was always, he's right 6 foot. No, he's not anywhere near that. But yeah, but I like this. It says, the elite goal-scoring prospect. I mean, you don't hand that out to 50 guys in a draft, so that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, like I'm not going to sit here and act like I've watched hours upon hours of Yoakum Kimmel tape leading into the draft. But I have seen a little bit, and he's got a great release on his shot. He shoots the puck really well. He can skate well. So all those things are what today's game is about. It's about speed and skill and creativity and the offense in the NHL was up this year. There was the highest scoring league in the NHL since the early 90s. So it's becoming more and more of an offensive game, much like the NFL is with each passing year. So the more of those guys you can find, the better chances you are of one of those guys eventually working out and turning into hopefully an elite player in the NHL.
Well, you talk about in the NFL about the – it's a cycle, right? I mean, it's like passing and scoring, then defense, then running the football and start it again. But as you've seen the last 10 years, these 7-on-7 leagues in high school, I mean, I know a coach that's very close to Ryan Porth who thought winning a 7-on-7 summer tournaments was the same as winning a state championship in football.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not even close, right? It's not even close. So you look at how the football now, these kids, I mean, every time I log on the Twitter and see a prospect going to Tennessee, it's always like, hey, this guy, you know, he's a 4-star receiver out of whatever. He's a 3-star receiver. He's a 4-star receiver. And he's a good skill player. And you see more and more of that going to passing the ball and the high-scoring offense. And you said that's the same way with hockey this past year.
So you said everything goes in cycles, and I agree. It does kind of feel to me, though, like as I watch football today, and hockey we'll see. It's basically like a one-year sample size with hockey where the offense was just insane this past year. But in the NFL, I feel like the last 10 years, you know, we've been getting to the point where everybody's throwing the football left and right. You know, the running game is still important, but it's not as important as it was in years past. And defenses, are judged a little bit differently now. Like, you know, the days of the 2000 Ravens or the 85 Bears or whatever defense you want to throw out there, are they gone because of the way the game is played now? From a rules standpoint, I mean, the rules are heavily favored towards the offense. And just from a talent standpoint, too, with some of these quarterbacks and receivers, I do wonder, like, are we ever going to see those grind it out, slug it out days in the NFL ever again? I don't know.
I don't know if you play the Steelers versus the Browns in November and those games that were eight passes thrown, they run the ball, and somebody wins 13-7.
45-mile-an-hour wind coming right. off Lake Erie. Yeah.
That's a great question. I don't know. I mean, look at the money the receivers got in NFL this offseason. A.J. Brown got a massive, massive contract. The guy for the Bills, was it Diggs?
Diggs, yeah.
Your boy that got traded from the Packers to the Raiders.
Adams.
Man, yeah. These massive deals, and then Tyreek Hill, Miami. So you see for now where it's going. Now you come back out, and if you've got a team, offensive team, these teams are all geared up for the pass game. They go out and just pound the ball. You know, run the ball 40, 45 times a game. And the same goes to the NBA with me. Everybody wants to shoot the three-pointer, but then you got a guy go inside. You can't stop him because they don't defend that anymore. That's like when A.J. – and I'm going to – an awful example, but this is what comes to mind. When A.J. Ogilvy was at Vanderbilt basketball, 09, 10, 11 right there, the game had changed to shooting three-pointers and taking the 25-footer and all that stuff like that. They would just pound the ball into him. He would do a spin move 2 feet away and score every time. I'm like, do that every time down the court. They're not working on that. Nobody could guard him to do that. And so you make those points. But now that NBA and basketball is involved too, and there was a great thing on YouTube not too long ago where they showed high school basketball games that came down to the final seconds where a team would be down by 1 point, and instead of working the ball inside, these guys were jacking up 35-footers, and nobody was making them.
Yeah.
And so the game evolved. So we'll see what happens with football, but I'm not sure football will ever go back to being 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
So that leads to kind of the philosophical question that I think a lot of people are wondering about the Titans right now, which is I don't think anybody's going to confuse the Titans offense with like some prolific passing attack. They don't have Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Mahomes or Josh Allen, whatever quarterback you want to throw in there, and they've made no secret about it. Their bread and butter is running the football, particularly, obviously, when Derrick Henry is healthy. So in the year 2022, do you think that you can win a Super Bowl with the way that the Titans want to play offense? Forget the talent for just a minute, but the way and the philosophy that they have, can that win in today's NFL?
Well, you can't. And by the way, stop dropping big Hendersonville words on me like philosophy. What'd you say?
Philosophy.
Yeah. Philosophical. There we go.
MTSU.
Question. Please stop doing that to me. I went to McGavick. My mind's hurting right now. So you look at, but you can't. I like the question, but then you got to involve the entire team. I go back to those Giants teams with Bill Parcells who offensively were awful, right? Yep. Otis Anderson running the football, getting 3.2 yards per carry. Sims hitting Mark Bavaro on 3rd and 7 for 9 yards, and it just wear you down. I absolutely think the Titans could do that. But you got to factor in the defense because the Giants defense with LT, Harry Carson, Jim Burt, George Marshall, all those guys, you couldn't go anywhere. They just beat you up. So the Titans defense could do that. Absolutely, the Titans can win the Super Bowl the way they're playing if they can get pound the ball at Derrick Henry.
Well, the defense has to be great in order for that to happen.
Honestly, a little better than great.
Yeah, but honestly, I look at their defense this year on paper, and we'll find out because how many times have we seen things on paper? I mean, look no further than the Titans offense last year when Julio came in.
Oh, God.
Everybody thought it was going to be the greatest offense in NFL history, and it was not. It did not work out that way. So we'll wait and see what happens. But I do look at this defense. Feel great about the front four. We've talked about that this week. The linebacking core, I don't think is getting enough attention around the league. Number one, because I think most people don't know who David Long Jr. is.
Yeah.
And number two, they've forgotten that like Zach Cunningham plays here.
Yep.
So he's pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the one question mark to me on defense is at corner, and Beauclair talked about that yesterday with Caleb Farley. But if you get that figured out, this defense has a chance to be really, really good, and that lends itself to what you're talking about in terms of that's the type of game they're going to have to play.
Absolutely. You know, you go back and look at the Patriots in the early 2010s and 12s with – they went double tight end. They had a couple – name a receiver from the Patriots from those years. I mean, maybe Wes Welker, and who's the guy, Edelman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's not guys who are going to be in the Hall of Fame, but he went two tight ends. And I know you had Brady, Brady's Brady, obviously. But the fact
they had Deion Branch win a Super Bowl MVP.
Right. Troy Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, all these guys. So you just get into a rhythm where you can do it. The defense is very underrated when New England was up there in those years. And but the two tight ends, the Titans have two. I'm reading all these great things about this tight end out of Maryland. I can't pronounce his name. And then the Austin Hooper kid that came over from Cleveland. So, I mean, they've got some talent there, and there's ways you can win ball games. You don't have to throw it 60 times a game, Jared Stillman, to win football games. You just don't have to do that.
We'll continue the conversation on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll have some news on the Titans as well, including a former owner nominated for the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I just wrote that down on my notes.
Wow, look at there. Synergy.
God, Robbie.
That's what we do here on this program. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Dubin. Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Friday morning. John on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says Joe is 0-3 against the mic. Can he get on the board today with a win? I think so far so good.
Somebody yesterday had said that they could hear the mic wobble on the stream or something. Yeah. So I'm projecting my voice more and staying away from the microphone today. But Chase McCabe's been – and then Chase gets out of town. He's the program director here. He gets up and leaves town on my final day. So I win, you know, even though the mic might take – what is it? I won the – I lost the battle, but I won the war.
Correct. Well, it's disrespect on McCabe's part to leave on the last day that you're here.
Yeah, I get it.
We'll get to that at some point. Joe, I do want to get your thoughts on this, and I saw this got put out, I think, yesterday, and then Jim Wyatt just tweeted again this morning. Bud Adams named a semifinalist in the coach/contributor category for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2023. So, obviously, Bud Adams, a longtime owner of the Oilers/Titans, has been named a semifinalist for the coach/contributor category for the 2023 Pro Football Hall of Fame class. So obviously that would be a huge honor if that goes through and the late Bud Adams makes his way into the Hall of Fame. What do you make of that, and what kind of stands out to you about Bud Adams and his time as owner as the team shifted from Houston to Memphis, to Vandy, to finally here at Nissan Stadium in Nashville?
Well, you talk to people in Houston, they despised Bud Adams. Cannot wait to see him get out of town. Of course, us in Nashville, we're like, come to Nashville and hang out with us and everything. Look, you look at what he started in 1960 with the AFL, and are all those owners in most of them already in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Ralph Wilson went in 2009 with, you know, started the Bills. So I think it's long overdue. And you look at the way the NFL has evolved now. You take, if they did not start that league and not had the NFL kind of step up to what they needed to do, and then the Super Bowl kind of became out of all that because the Kansas City Chiefs owner, his daughter came up with the name for the Super Bowl. But anyway, there's a lot that involved there that started because those guys started the AFL, and they had a lot of money to spend and got the job done, and I think it's long overdue. Now, I'm reading this as well. Others that are up for this, you know, Robert Kraft is up for it now,
yep.
Carl Peterson, Dan – I mean, how is Dan Reeves not in the Hall of Fame already? Art Rooney Jr., Marty Schottenheimer. So there's a lot, Mike Shanahan. So there's a lot of competition to get up there. But I think Bud is very deserving of getting into the Hall of Fame. And it's kind of a shame that he's not been there. And this is not this year. This is 2003, correct?
2023, yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll be next year.
Yeah. So, but there's a lot of other guys that are up for that too as well. Are there three that go in that category or just one? I don't remember.
No, honestly, I don't remember either. I'll have to look back at that. But to your point, I mean, you know, Shanahan. There's a lot of really good competition for that. So sometimes it takes a while.
Rune Arledge,
I mean,
for the TV's Monday Night Football, for what he did. There's a lot that's in it. You know, Mike Holmgren. Bud deserves being over Mike Holmgren, but Art Modell's on there. I mean, there's just still a lot of people that are dismayed what he did with the Browns and moving them to Baltimore. I mean, there's a lot of politics going on all this. You know, I heard Kuharsky one time was talking about how they vote for guys for the Hall of Fame to cover the team.
Yep.
And he said, I forget one time, I don't remember who it was, because you go and you kind of plead their case. You already know their story, but you kind of – you're batting for them. And he said somebody stood up was when Jerry Rice came up for the Hall of Fame. The guy stood up and said, all right, here's so-and-so, Bill Smith, to talk about Jerry Rice. And he stood up and he said, Jerry Rice. And he sat back down.
So that's a whole good lot needs to be said.
Right. So, but I, as far as personally,
now that conversation will go whenever Tom Brady does actually retire.
Yeah.
That's probably how that'll go in that room.
That's
as
right.
Well.
Tom Brady. Yeah, there he's in. I think he deserves to get in. It's going to be a lot of competition for that to get in there, but I think absolutely he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
It's interesting because I think about where they're at now and the job that Amy Adams Strunk has done. I think she's done really well since kind of taking control of things with the Titans, and we'll see what happens with the new stadium and all that stuff coming up here in the next few years. But you know, after, you know, Bud's death, there was a transitional period from this franchise that
guy
wasn't good. I mean, it was, you know, you had Tommy Smith in charge of things, and it was, you know, Steve Underwood was back in there.
Because Tommy was terrible. There's a great picture in the locker room where he's talking to Nate Washington after a game, and Tommy Smith is sitting in his chair that Nate needs to change, and Nate's just kind of sitting there looking at him, and Tommy's just probably, you know, going off and talking nonstop about something that has nothing to do with football. And that pitcher, just looking at Nate's face at that time, is like, man,
get out of my chair, please.
Why am I stuck here? Right. So, but it's like Amy comes in, fires her brother-in-law, you know, hit the bricks, pal, and takes over. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot that's going on. But I again, you look at his line of work, what he did, and he's one of 29 semifinalists in the coach contributor category. The Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I don't know how many get – is it three I thought I read to get in there? I don't know.
We'll have to find that out. But either way, I think it's a big honor to make it to this point, and I agree. Like, I think eventually he deserves to get in there. I mean, I always think back to – I used to have, like, this – the NFL Films used to put out this, like, season-ending tape of every team's season. I don't even know if they still do it anymore, but I always go back to the 99-2000 Titans, the year they made it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And like there's like this intro into it, and it ends with Bud Adams standing on a stage when they're kind of introducing Adelphia Coliseum. They're like, our season's going to begin in Adelphia Coliseum, but it's going to end in Atlanta in the Super Bowl. And then it flashes to the Titans in the Super Bowl. I don't know. It's always been so cool to me.
Oh, that is cool. Yeah, there are 29 up that are in the coach contributor category. Along with Bud Adams. And in the senior part of that, Billy White Shoes Johnson is nominated. There are 25 senior candidates in there. And some of these guys you thought they'd be in there, like Roger Craig. I thought he should be in the Hall of Fame. Lester Hayes should be in the Hall of Fame. Joe Jacoby. Of course, Billy White. Joe Klecko for the Jets back in the day, part of the New York, which is one of the greatest names ever, the New York Sack Exchange.
Oh, yeah.
With him, Marty Lyons, Mark Gastineau, and I can never remember the fourth guy of the New York Sack Exchange. So, Klecko, there's a lot that these guys, Jim Marshall is up there, Clay Matthews Jr., guy played like 18 seasons at linebacker in the NFL. So, you hope Bud gets in. That'd be nice.
I think it would be, too, and I'm interested to see what kind of happens with the stadium stuff now. I mean, that's going to be the next order of business that has to get figured out for the Titans. What are your thoughts on the stadium?
Oh, here
you know,
we
Nissan
go.
Stadium is, you know, it's run down a little bit. It's not that old in the grand scheme of things, but it has been run down, and there are certainly improvements that need to be made to it. But it looks like the Titans are going to go a different route and build a new stadium. What are your thoughts on that?
City of Nashville should not pay a damn dime for this stadium. Not a dime.
Yeah.
Not when the schools are falling. I go, here we go. Schools are falling apart. Teachers are underpaid. Not a dime should go to that state. When the NFL could come to town and write a check for $2.5 billion and build that stadium. NFL could build a $2.5 billion stadium for every team.
Yeah.
They've got that much money. That much money sitting there. The city of Nashville should not pay a dime for this stadium. They've got the money. The league's got the money. The Adams family has the money. You pay for every second of this.
I'm really interested to see how that part of it works out. And what does the timeline look like? Because the plan seems to be it's going to go next to where Nissan Stadium is right now, and they'll build it in the parking lot, and I guess they'll tear that Nissan Stadium down right after that. But I'm interested to see timeline-wise, because we wondered about the World Cup. Obviously, Nashville did not get the World Cup, so you don't have to worry about like those two things in opposition of each other. But you know, sometimes these deals, they look like they're on a path pretty clearly to getting figured out, and then they run into an impasse. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and so that's the whole thing, is that let them pay for it. Let them take care of it. You got the property over there. You let you guys figure it out. But the city of Nashville, you know, I know they started a tax on hotels and you know, people, so it's all like, well, you're not paying for it. The people have cut. How many times have we heard that? It's not going to cost you a dime, Robbie. They're going to pay for it, and in the end game, it's like, hey, by the way, we miscalculated. It's over budget by $600 million. We're going to raise your property taxes. We're going to
price
add
of
this.
Metal right now is way more expensive than we thought it
the
would
city
be.
Of Nashville should not pay a dime for this stadium when the NFL has so much money they can write a check today and pay for that stadium.
Well, the money that the NFL is going to get is continuing to go up with new TV deals and Amazon and all that stuff coming in as well. So we'll see what happens on that front. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Mark Nagy, Joe Dubin's best friend, allegedly.
Well, if you're a Tennessee football fan, and Robbie and I have talked about this during the week, about the last, you know, 10, 12 years of Tennessee football, now kind of the upswing with Heupel, and Robbie said, you know, these last 10 years have been, woo. Well, there's a friend of ours that wrote a book about Tennessee football. If you've never heard this book or seen it, you got to get this book. It's fantastic. It's called Decade of Dysfunction, and Mark Nagy will join us next.
We'll get to that coming up on the other side. You can make every day a good old day with the hand-crank taste of Bluebell ice cream. Nice weekend coming up. It is going to cool off a little bit, so we're not going to be quite at 110 degrees of heat index, but still plenty warm enough to enjoy the good taste of Bluebell ice cream. The good old days are being made right now. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.